This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
It's 2018, and yes, the Whitecaps Weekly appears to be back. Patrick Johnston here. We're going to work on a week-to-week basis, and I think it'll be a rotating selection of guests. That's the plan for now. We'll see what happens. Our first guest, he actually was, I believe, the last guest of the Whitecaps Weekly in 2017, Mike Martinego of Famous Soccer Analysis. Hi, how are you?
You know, you don't have a place to connect me to anymore, do you?
I don't even know who you are.
It's true. When you ask me, I was like, really? I don't even live there anymore. You want to talk to me still? What's going on here?
People appreciate your banter, I think, is the story here, is what I'm saying.
You know what? We're just revving up to early March. We're going to get it all ready to go. And you know, I've long said I'm not a fan of this team, so to speak, but I like to talk about them. And then now being in Los Angeles, I have two more to look at closely too, with the Galaxy and LAFC.
We could call you our foreign correspondent. How about that?
You could go with that. It's a true story. Please contact me anytime.
You would have to say football, though. You're not allowed to say soccer anymore. Soccer.
It's not soccer. By the way, the soccer references down here are pretty awesome. Like that, they do happen.
Off the charts good, is that what you're saying, or just?
I would go down that road. I mean, it's pretty good. You meet a few people. A lot of people tend to, a lot of the older the moms and dads would say it's like a kid sport. Like there is definitely that mentality, that belief. But they love to say they're soccer. You know, there's a lot of fields though. I mean, that sounds like a really stupid point, but there's so many like recreational facilities. So it's actually a bit surprising that there isn't more good players from the kind of Los Angeles area. That's probably another topic for another day, with the whole ordeal with the system and then losing players to Mexico, et cetera, et cetera.
That is, I believe, going to be your first assignment as foreign correspondent, to dig deep into the issue of Americans wandering south and not propping up their own national league. But we'll leave that for another day. I'm fine with that.
A single tier, by the way, is we've done the whole like role reversal times three, I think now, where you might have joined me, and then I joined you, and then you joined me on Soccer X, and now I've joined you again.
It's thrilling. It's very exciting. It's a continuing evolution. Like I said, I'm pleased that you're here. We'll see who else comes on. I mean, I think JJ Adams, who's going to be writing a fair bit about the Whitecaps this year, I think, will be here, and Mike Bell, who often does our videos and at least knows the game, will be here. And I believe Paul Chapman, who, you know, I don't know if you know, but he's managed to finagle himself a daily 5-minute appearance with Donnie and the Moj in the afternoons. And, you know, we do know that Paul loves talking sports. So and he loves talking soccer. So
he loves his soccer. He loves his Jurgen Klopp. He loves his Liverpool side that somehow beats Manchester City one day and then days later loses to Swansea.
Yeah.
So looking forward to hearing his hot takes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about Darren Maddox fairly often as well. So, should we get down to business, Michael?
Yes, please.
Okay. How was
Let's do it.
How was your off season? Was it as good as Carl Robinson's?
Hey, you know, you just take some time off. You know, you look at the fine lines, and you try to find more character, and you try to find, you know, a lot of the key things that you need to rebuild and retool. You know, they made three semifinals this past season. Did you hear him say that? By the way,
they made they did make three.
But that is such spin, though, Patrick.
I know.
That's come on. He actually went down that road. And of most definitely the one to hang your hat on would be the CCL one, for sure. And that happened essentially a year ago, I mean, 10 months. But he actually went down the road, the path of three semifinals, including Canadian championship, including the semifinal of the conference when they were eliminated by Seattle.
You know, because, yeah, exactly. And, you know, other terms, that would be the first round of the Canadian championship and the quarterfinals of Major League Soccer's infamous MLS Cup playoffs.
He knows how to spin it, and as you could tell, I try to use some of that in my adventurous off season. This league doesn't sleep, though. I mean, what was it, December the 9th when Toronto FC, yes, the TFC and their army won MLS Cup, and here we are on January the 24th, a beautiful Wednesday, and we're, you know, they're back at it already.
See, here's my take on Robbo when he says things like that. I think he's testing us to see if any of us are paying attention.
I think there's something to that. Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think I've said this before, I will gladly say it now that I'm out of town, but I also think there's a bit of an arrogance. There's a bit of a snobbery. He's like, I know the game better than you guys. So I'm going to say what I'm going to say. And are you really going to call me on it? Like, I totally get that vibe. And for, you know what, for the most part, a lot of people eat out of his hand. So.
Yeah. He's the coach. People like to defer to authority. It's not a unique thing to him, I would say. I think that happens in most sports, but yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's one of those ones where, you know, I certainly will say this. I do enjoy the sort of banter that he seems to enjoy when you're in a scrum with him. I think he actually appreciates when you do push back a little bit, because I know that, you know, he'll sort of challenge your question in a way that he knows he's still going to give you his answer. That's been my experience. But I mean, the truth is, I don't get to go out there all that often. And so, you know, things like that. Well, yeah, I would like to think if I were there, I would have said, well, come on, Carl. But
yeah, yeah.
At the same time.
Well, truth be told, when I was actually living in that city, I would rarely get out there because I was working 9 to 5, so right. I couldn't make it out to training. And I'd get out to games typically, but in terms of training, I wouldn't get out there. So no, I understand that component, but yeah, he does have his playful parts. There's no doubt about that, where he gets to go back and forth with some of the constant media.
And I think in the end too, I mean, that, like, you know, is it really that big a deal? I mean, he sort of gives you the spin and you're like, okay, great. Let's talk about, you know, Mexican midfielders who might be right backs, things like that.
Well, I guess we can say this, though. If he doesn't go with that spin and he doesn't make some of these outrageous or outlandish comments, then, you know, what do we have?
Right.
Like, I'm not talking. I'm not making some silly joke before the supper/super draft about how the Whitecaps are going to select a player named Fine Lines, am I? Yeah. Like, that doesn't exist if he doesn't say these things. So I'll give him credit for that.
You know, I mean, I've enjoyed, you know, Mike Petke's, you know, when he's on form as much as anyone, but there have been examples of the opposite from him. And, you know, we can think of other coaches who just aren't interested in these kinds of engagements. So, you know, I'd rather, I will say this, I'd rather have what we get from Robbo than we might get from someone else. So. I'm not meaning to, you know, necessarily fawn over him here. It might sound like that.
You are.
Okay, fine.
You are.
You got me. what do we think of his offseason? You know, that obviously, I mean, you actually, it's quite amazing. I think tweeted last summer that there was going to be.
It was fall. It was fall.
I don't remember.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
Okay,
here.
Last fall.
I think you're also. This is, as I've said before, Jeff Back Patterson. Yes. Yeah, this is. It's a bit of a back pat for sure. Yes. I was looking at. I just remember in October, I want to say, and just seeing how the season was shaking down and them getting into the playoffs and not taking top spot in the Western Conference and thinking there's going to be a lot of moves made. I mean, you look at the roster they had and just knowing what was going to happen, there was dead giveaways in the sense of David Oestead and Jordan Harvey and Andrew Jacobson. I thought those three were as good as done. And I mean, there was obviously plenty more, but I was thinking, you know, we're looking at 15 or 20 players being gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was at a time when I think I was basing it off the roster around September or October when it showed 34 players on the books.
Yeah.
And we know how these rosters roll with various loans. Davey Flores is still a white cap, right? I mean, what? Like,
yeah.
Are we serious here? But he is, technically. And, yeah, I think I looked on Tuesday, yesterday, and you know, he's at around 16 right now when it comes to different bodies. From the 34 back in October, there's only 18 remaining.
Right.
So he's made a variety of moves. And, you know, he made some interesting comments about getting guys with perhaps more energy and maybe some more character. And he did say also shedding some salary, which I was curious about because, you know, what does that mean? Is there going to be another DP? Are they going to look to make up that salary that had been shedded? And, you know, are they going to actually go for it a bit further? But, yeah, it's curious to see. I think, you know, Kai Kamara is probably going to be a good fit. It's a move that I was led to believe was going to happen about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I'm making fun of myself, people. But I think, you know, he's going to be, this is a team that crosses the ball into the area.
Yeah.
What do you typically need in that scenario? You need a guy who is tall. You need a guy who has some height, tall and height, same thing, who can get up and who can use their head. So, you know, that would be an ideal scenario if you're going to have a ball swung in, who's going to get on the other end of it. So, you know, that can probably resolve some issues up front. But, you know, it comes down to systems too. How is the team going to, how are they going to play this year? Is it, you know, it's a lot of talk about the potential of a 3-5-2. You know, Rabo's talking about how he's planning on mixing it up with three at the back, maybe four at the back, two forwards, two behind, one forward. So, you know, there's a lot of decisions, and, you know, he's talking a bit of a big game right now with the idea of all this flexibility of this squad. And, you know, I'm curious how that's going to unravel as the season progresses.
I'll just quickly run through the list of all the names that are gone. It goes Adekubi, Bolaños, Bustos. Technically, David Edgar is actually in training camp, so sort of David Edgar. I don't know if you're counting Davey Flores or not, but not Davey Flores. Kyle Gregg, Jordan Harvey, Nosa, who I think we'll talk about later, Andrew Jacobson, Matias Laba, who I think is unlikely to stay with the team, although he is going to continue to train or, recover for now. That's my understanding. Where else are we? We've got McKendry, Freddie Montero, David Osted, Spencer Ritchie, Mauro Rosales, Cole Seiler, and Shannon Williams, which is...
It's literally a laundry list.
It is. And it's, you know, I mean, you can actually make a team out of that whole list. So, and I don't think actually it would be too bad of a team either, to be honest. But
I think for the most part, those were a lot of starters in Rabo's time too.
Yeah. No, I think
they really were.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, there's two things. You were talking about Rabo talking a big game about, you know, changing his structure and, you know, looking at a bunch of different options. And certainly by trading for Kai Kamara, signing Anthony Blondell, you know, you're definitely giving yourself a very different look up front, the kind of look that we really haven't ever seen before in that, you know, sort of big physical guys who have a finishing ability. You know, you do wonder how the rest of it looks because, yeah, okay, Jordy Reyna is going to be in there. You know, Christian Teixeira is going to be in there. You assume Alphonso Davies will be playing more. You know, you do have Breck Shea around. And then, you know, you have a guy like Bernie Abini who really, I think they liked a lot last year, made sense for them. But then you look at the way they want to play now, a guy who's really kind of a right winger and they're not necessarily going to have a pure right winger anymore. So do they need him? And then you look at, like I've already mentioned him, Efrain Juarez, who is, a very good player by all accounts, who says he wants to play midfield, and the Whitecaps are going to play him at midfield. And you know, you add it up, you start going, okay, I can see where a 3-5-2 comes from. I mean, it's going to be a system that's intends to get wide players up the field and have some guys being very smart behind them, you know, looking for potential counter strikes from the other team. But in the end, it is going to be a team that in theory plays differently, but we still have to actually see that. You know, the coach can say all he wants, but he actually has to go out there. I mean, we have seen instances in the past where he has said one thing, but in the end stayed the other way. So to me, that's, that is, I mean, it is the story of the offseason, beyond the fact that they have had a rather substantial roster turnover. And there certainly are a lot of gaps to fill in the roster. You know, some of the thinking, I assume, has to do with the fact that they don't have a USL team parked in the same city anymore, so they don't have to kind of, you know, they don't have that luxury, but they also have to keep that in mind. I mean, he knows he needs to find – he is going to have to find a third keeper of some kind. He has said he would like to add another attacking midfielder. When I asked him, you know, how many Mexicans are you going to be signing, he said at least one. And then went, how do you like that? And you know, we all laughed. But, you know, it feels like it's a team that's not quite finished. And I think you look at it and you kind of go, given everything we've seen from him before, I mean, yeah, he's got two players basically in every spot, which has generally been his preference. But I'm not sure. It doesn't feel like a stronger team, that's for sure. It just feels like a different team. And last year's team, we all knew what the struggles were, which is that at the end of the day, yeah, okay, they could play some long balls and get a bunch of headers and do well on set pieces, but at the end of the day, they came up against a better team in the Seattle Sounders and they couldn't do anything. I mean, even Robinson mentioned that. You know, and in going into, I mean, I remember I was at the last game, that the first leg of the semifinal, the much derided and rightly so game that had one shot on target or whatever it was. And I asked him, I said, you know, I said, your system is designed to take advantage of teams that commit fouls, and Seattle doesn't commit fouls. So what are you going to do? And, you know, I think he didn't say you're right. You know, I mean, he's not going to say that. But you kind of did have the sense that he kind of knew they were going to need a break or two. And I mean, that's what they were playing for. He was pretty open about that. They didn't get one, and that's no surprise. I mean, Seattle went to the final again for good reason.
Well, if you take this 3-5-2 into account, it shapes up well for the counter. I mean, it's ideal. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, fits well with what they have, certainly what they had last year. They were kind of trending in that direction, but they didn't get enough of it. You know, when they did counter, it was okay, but they needed more of that, and they needed it more consistently. I think you're spot on when you say, when you look at last year to where they are right now, and, you know, where are they exactly? Are they ahead? Are they behind? Are they the same? I would, you know, I was going to say like for like, and I probably shouldn't go that far in some of the moves they've made, because I'm not going to say Freddie Montero is a like for like for a Kai Kamara. But, you know, you do, I guess, have that resume that's like for like in terms of the goal output. I'll give you that. I wouldn't say they're ahead of where they're at. I think something the Caps have done, and I don't want to say fairly well, but what they tend to do most years, and I don't have every year in front of me, but you can certainly look to a season ago, is they do like to grab players right down to the wire that seem to be castaways from other sides. Like, this is what the Caps do. And I think of a Breck Shea from last year. Yes, they moved Giles Barnes, but guess what? Orlando didn't want Breck Shea anymore, so they were able to grab him. You know, Freddie Montero was essentially a cast aside from playing in the Chinese league, and they were able to bring him in. So, you know, we know that this side is never, and I would never be in caps lock, would they're never going to bring in this $5 million player. They're simply not. So what are they going to do? They might go a little above, but they'll try to find somebody that's kind of coming in on the cheap. I've seen a couple names right now. Whether they would fit or not is another story. But, you know, there's been some talk with Columbus and Justin Merrim and what his future might hold. Lee Wynn, former Whitecap, who, you know, essentially had a cup of coffee with Vancouver. But Lee Wynn is another guy who might be a guy who could be picked up because of his contract situation with New England. Lee Wynn, for example, is the perfect player that the Caps could grab in the sense of a really shitty situation. A guy who's on the outs with his club, who could take a move, and he would probably be the perfect fit and add the attacking midfield element too. Because right now, Patrick, when I look at things, and you lose Christian Bolaños, who was so up and down last year, but outside of Reyna and outside of Teixeira, like, where is this side?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing I do wonder about in the end. Like, there was some creative element last year. I mean, Bolaños fell off at the end of the year, but he was clearly, I mean, he was still the guy that led the team in key passes. Like, he was the guy who was the best passing player on the team, and there was a reason why, you know, Robbo turned to him at the end of the season, even if it didn't perform. And you know, quite clearly, Alphonso Davies and Breck Shea, neither of them are that player. They're a different player. You know, Christian Teixeira sort of plays that element, but he's not a playmaking guy. He's a guy that's taken the ball to the net. And Jordy Reyna's the same. So, it's hard to imagine right now looking at a lineup that has actually less creativity than a team that was, you know, I think derided for not having enough. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like a team that's focused on keeping it tight in the middle and looking for breaks the other way. And, you know, the fans want something different. I mean, I think they want, you know, you've already mentioned it. They dream of that big, big name, big ticket signing. That's not going to happen, but the team's made that clear. But playing style, I think, is going to become a question now, because, you know, this is a team that's now, you know, been in the league since 2011. This is not a new team. It's not the shiny new object anymore. And to really get people interested, you know, they need to get some wins, but they need to entertain. And I think that was a struggle last year. You know, I didn't hear as many people last year saying, man, I had a lot of fun. And, you know, the year before, there were people that came, and I've mentioned this before, who hadn't been to a Whitecaps game before. And even though 2016 was a dire year in most respects, they still enjoyed themselves. And I didn't hear that as much this year. And we saw it in the stands as well. They didn't have as many bums in the seats as they did for the most part, even in the previous season, which, again, like I said, didn't go that well. So to me, there is that question mark. You know, I mean, winning will be good, and they showed well enough, but I think people are still waiting to be truly impressed. And right now, as I've said, it's, you look at the squad and you're like, yep, there's some very good players in there. And I understand, you know, the thinking behind, I think, most of the players that are in the squad and what Robbo's looking for them to do. But I still sit there and I think, you know, this is a guy that talked about bringing an attacking midfielder. Maybe this is the time to talk about Nosa. This is a guy that saw a chance to bring in a player that he didn't have, a type of skill set that he didn't have. An opportunity presented itself. You know, they had a spot to fill. They had a bit of money to spend. And they were able to say, listen, we can pay you this much for the end of the year, and if you impress, we'll pick you up for this amount for the next year. And I look at Nosa and I say, that's the kind of guy that, you know, on the face is the kind of guy this team could use, and yet now he's gone. And I know that there were, you know, I there's not a lot, let's be honest. I've written a bit. I've written a few things I know. I've tried to analyze as much as I could. You know, this was a player that, like I said, the team liked. Carl Robinson liked enough to play him in three huge matches at the end of the year, and then a month later, basically they're saying, yeah, it's, you know, we're at an impasse. So What happened? Something happened.
Yeah, well, definitely something happened. And, you know, if you go on to Twitter, you'll hear every story that exists. There's a lot of Kool-Aid that I'm not touching with this story. There's a lot of things that I just, you know, that you hear. And for me, I just can't accept it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, by the way, what you wrote, this is my time, my turn to give you a back pat, because what you wrote was 100% correct. And I didn't write it because I can't write. I only tweet things. So, but what I noted was the fact that you can't sit back and claim, well, Nosa was crap. He offered nothing. I'm glad they moved on. You can't do that. And the reason being is because in a conference deciding match, Carl Robinson decided to put this guy in. It was a running joke towards the end of the season. Where's Nosa? When is Nosa going to play? Is he going to get in? What the hell are they doing with this guy? So they decide to put him in the final regular season match. What a ballsy decision, because he essentially, you know, it's a guaranteed sub. And he goes in, they play. What, they had an early lead in that match, if memory serves. They end up losing. So that right there, the fact that they put him into such a critical match, to me, means that he's a pretty important player. They don't play him in that San Jose match, the 5-0 victory, and then they go back to him for both matches against the Sounders. Again, crucial, pivotal matches that the Caps, that, you know, it's all or nothing, cliche time, but that was the case. So, you know, you can debate the whole thing, but for me, in my mind, it says to me that the Caps valued this player. They thought he had something to offer. I thought they took, you know, if they were uncertain of him, then you put Tony Chani in, right? And one of the things that I thought, especially when we find that Nose is done and dusted here in Vancouver, is that they're very fortunate Tony Chani didn't leave angry at the fact that he was passed over for Nosa in that final match. This is a guy who played, you know, the majority of the season in the middle of the park. And this guy just comes in on his third match of the season only to take over a role. You know, these guys have egos, and it's no different than Joe Schmo working at whatever job. You know, there's something attached to it. There's, you know, you have feelings about somebody else taking your spot. So I'm so confused as to how this happened. And again, the speculation of, well, you know, and don't get me wrong, the agents in the game, and as I think we've seen with the whole Alexis Sanchez thing with Arsenal going to Manchester United and that whole ordeal, while it's a different continent, I think it exists everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shady things that take place. There's a lot of agents that do some dirty things. I think there's a lot of agents who feed stories. There's most certainly that. And I think there's teams that can try to, you know, form that narrative as well. But I just have difficulty believing that a player who is not making Jovinko money, not making, you know, once upon a time David Beckham money, has some claim that he wants to sit in a better, in a coach or business class area of a plane away from his teammates. I just do not, I can't comprehend that. I'm not drinking that. I don't get it. It was such a bizarre ordeal, and it didn't smell good when they didn't, or they exposed him for the expansion draft. That didn't sit right. I was a bit confused by that, but it was trending like it was going to be okay, and he was going to re-sign with Vancouver, and here he is. He's at what's the club here? Anathosis Famagusta of Cyprus. So I don't know. It's just a confusing scenario, and I'll let you say your piece now because I've been going for a while.
Yeah, I mean, on just first of all, on the expansion draft, I mean, in hindsight, that was one of those ones where I'm, you know, even going into it, I was going, man, they got some decisions to make because you couldn't protect a lot of players. So you know, that's something that's not been brought up. I have no information that this might even be a factor. But, I wouldn't see it being possible that, you know, it being one of many odd rules that MLS has, that a player would have been told, hey, by the way, we're picking up your contract, but we have to expose you and you might end up in L.A., you know, I could, you know, entirely see that being a scenario where a player goes, but I, like I said, I don't know if that's what happened. I don't have any reason to think that's what happened, but clearly something fell apart, and the team patiently, every time I asked, said, we're working on it. And, you know, at least on my end, I was certainly never given any hints about what the issue was about. As far as I understand from the bits and pieces I've been able to gather in other parts, is that, you know, it doesn't seem like money was an issue. I don't know in the end. I mean, there have been suggestions it was stuff around the edges, and in the end, the team just chose to go in another direction. I know this much is true. The team chose to go in another direction, and Nosa now plays for a club where clearly he's making far less money. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Making far less money, but with much nicer beaches. So,
well, you know what? I will say this. I don't know if I completely dismiss the idea that he's making a bunch less. I'll say that because the club from Cyprus, Famagusta, or as they go by, Anorthosis, they once upon a time, they were a decent club in Cyprus. I mean, they were in the Champions League, they were in the Europa League, and now the bigger club in Cyprus is Apoel. But I was just looking at the table, actually, in Cyprus, and they're in third place, 4 points back of Apoel, for first in the league, and first would be Champions League qualification, too. So, I don't know exactly what kind of money he's making. Certainly the travel is going to be a lot different in Cyprus than it would be in Major League Soccer. But, you know, the thing that sticks out to me, and I understand the argument that you can say, well, he only played three matches, and I think in two of the three he was subbed out. So, you know, it's a small sample size, and I wasn't buying what he was selling. And, you know, he didn't look all that great. I mean, okay, he completed a lot of passes, but they were short passes. He's not that big of a deal, you know, and I've heard a lot of that on the old Twitter machine. I'll say this, though. I think one player for the longest time that had such a big influence on the Caps and who was raved about by so many fans and was the unsung hero was a guy by the name of Matias Laba. And he could have been something of that ilk in my mind. And he came with a better resume than Matias Laba did, who came to Vancouver from Toronto FC, and he was cast aside because he was that extra expensive designated player. So that, again, that's another example of the Caps picking up the scraps from another team. But, you know, Nosa came to Vancouver playing, you know, he spent time playing in La Liga at Real Betis. You know, he had played in Israel for Maccabi Tel Aviv. Okay, you say, oh, well, okay, big deal. But, I mean, these were decent clubs. I mean, Maccabi's another team that had played in the Champions League. Real Betis playing in La Liga, or probably quality-wise, the best league in the world. So he had a decent resume. And again, if you were to make the comparison from a Nosa to a Laba, I think he carried a lot of value. It's not like he was a lot older. He's 1 year older than Matias Laba. So, we've talked in and around the situation. Nobody really has. I think the only people who have answers are Whitecaps personnel who would actually be honest about it, and Nosa and his people. But I honestly believe it's a real shame because I think he was a steady presence, and he started to look comfortable. I know it's three matches, but he did start to look comfortable. And I'll just go back to the initial point. For me, I think the Caps, I think Robbo, I think they valued him a lot to put him in that position to come in three of the final four matches of the season to cast aside a guy like Tony Chani to put him in. He obviously meant something, and off the field, off the pitch, if you will, something fell apart. And I'd love to know. I mean, I wouldn't buy a book about it, but I'm just curious what the hell happened away from it all with the club and agents and the league.
Yeah, and we'll see. You know, I'll obviously keep trying to figure out. I mean, it's not the story's over, so you know, I generally try to ascribe to what our former sports editor Jonathan McDonald always tried to advise us to do, which is, let's be honest, let's look forward, let's not look back, because looking, you know, the stories are more interesting when you try to look forward. But every once in a while, you do need to step back and look backwards, and I did a bit of that, of course, with David Ostead over Christmas, with what was going down with him, with his contracts, and you know, we don't need to go into that, but. You know, the fact of the matter is the MLS remains a bit of a funny beast. And from that standpoint, let's finish off with a review of not the MLS Super Draft, where the Whitecaps picked up a couple young, quick wingbacks, Robbo favorite type players. But let's move along to the always famous, always exciting, and always well-reviewed MLS Super Draft. Michael, this was...
The sad part in all of this is I think really I'm the only one who cares for this. I love bad jokes. I love beating jokes to death. Jokes that I like only. Like not like other ones, I'll call you out if you're beating it to death. But this one I like. I just like to mock things. The Super Draft being one of them. Maybe somebody else at one point started calling it a Super Draft. But I think I've been rolling with this for about 3 or 4 years now. It's a whole lot of fun, and no surprise that LAFC went with tacos first overall.
It was a great pick. I mean, there were some really true gems in this list. And
as somebody who's moved to Los Angeles, you know, Mexican food is all around you, and so again, they have to go with what they know and get tacos at first overall. How could you pass up? Second year in a row, by the way, that tacos has gone first overall.
Well, you know, here's my question. As this goes along, are you sitting there sort of rubbing your beard and thinking, what's the best joke I can make at this time? Because, for instance, like, what are LA Galaxy doing picking pancakes at second? I mean, I love pancakes. I thought, you know, good for pancakes finally getting some credit. But, you know, there's a lot
Patrick,
of...
Patrick, As I said on Friday when the supper draft was taking place at a much more fan-friendly time of 10 a.m. Pacific time, by the way.
Unbelievable. P.S.
I was saying it. Pancakes is totally a Siggy Schmidt pick. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
This is the guy who...
What does this guy want right now?
Food. He likes his food. He wants pancakes for supper.
Yeah.
He'll do it.
Yeah.
And so it didn't surprise me. Outside the box, certainly. But you know, he went for it. He wants to eat pancakes for dinner, and that's what he went with.
I can't remember who it was, but somebody had the excellent point that, like, what the heck was Minnesota United thinking picking turkey sandwich at seventh overall? I mean, I was shocked at that pick, given that they had both fish tacos and souvlaki available. What were they thinking there? And then their overall
fish tacos was a high pick, by the way, a year ago, and they dropped significantly.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
big stunner from MUFC.
What was MUFC telling you about their number 7 pick, turkey sandwich, followed up by number 15, a curry, and then all the way down last pick of the first round, them picking a Caesar salad? Like, what was their plan here? They didn't have one. It bit like the real.
They clearly didn't. Exactly, just like the real life team, where they, as I said on Friday, it seems as though they thought they could, the only way they were going to acquire players is through the draft, because they kept trading for picks and they kept giving away a lot for these picks. They're like, oh, you want some TAM? Yeah, we'll take your pick. Just take all the TAM. They did the same here. They went all around the world getting all these various foods. Just confusing stuff from that side.
You know, the other thing about, I mean, in real life, MUFC, I mean, I saw a review, sort of, let's look at the teams going into the season. And, you know, they were very much a team like, well, they have fewer interesting players than last year, and that says a lot. And so I sat there thinking, man, are they going to sign Peter Vianis next? Like, I mean, you're talking about an all-time great Whitecap there, a guy that Tommy Soan just had to have for whatever reason. And, you know,
Tommy terrific.
Baffling. Anyway, baffling stuff from MUFC. But I would just like to note the truly, I think, one of the most underrated picks of the whole thing was New York Red Bulls just completely saying, you know what, let's be real. What were we here for? Let's draft cake. Who cares about supper? I just want dessert. It was bold.
Well, they think, yeah, it was. And if you look at that, if you look at that opening round, 23 picks, they were the only ones. I mean, pancakes, certainly a bit off the board, but cake at 16, and they're the only ones who went with dessert. It was, and a weird one too, because they didn't even say what cake, just cake in general. That's what they were going with. So it was a bit of a weird one from New York Red Bulls, but we know Jesse Marsh. We know that he's the guy who thinks he has all the answers, and he thinks he's found something special with cake here at 16.
And then, you know, the amount of outrage I saw about NYFC Patrick Vieira picking mashed potatoes over fries. just, you know, one of the late head scratchers. I mean, without saying how, I think I complimented you already, how perfect the Whitecaps picking roast beef was. I mean, that's a solid, but perhaps unspectacular choice for dinner. You know, you're going to enjoy yourself, but you know, you could have maybe gone with like chili. I'm a big fan of chili.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, I
chili understand. Who they went with a season ago.
Is that who they were a season ago? Interesting.
They went with a season ago. They went with chili, and roast beef is just like getting a defensive midfielder. You know, it's just. Same old, try to hold down the four. The shocker there with Vieira and NYCFC going after mashed potatoes is the fact that they don't even get gravy. It's just mashed potatoes. So, I mean, talk about how plain and unfortunate that meal is. And that's who they went with. So a bit of a shock, but it was quite the draft overall. You know, you see Chicago picking up souvlaki, you know, again, going international. Very impressive. And, you know, we almost dismissed this one, but Sporting Kansas City picking up donuts at 13.
That's a good point. Yeah, sure. I missed that. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, Jesse.
That was not bad. So they kind of find that range between pancakes and cake,
Jesse,
and go for donuts.
Jesse Marsh, perhaps inspired by his old team, I suppose. Oh no, wait, SKC. Mm. Sorry, SKC got donuts. Sorry, I was thinking Real.
That's right.
Pardon me.
That's right. Yeah.
Pardon me.
Don't get too excited.
You know, it was. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go.
I was going to say on a side note, a couple of, and I don't know if we should try to get serious for a second, but just a couple of actual draft things. And I think I just changed the page here, but
no, that's fine.
Montreal Impact and Remy Gard, who's coming into MLS here, how they just absolutely did not give a rat's ass for the draft. And they passed all these picks. They traded picks. I think they ended up picking one player overall, and he had zero interest for the MLS Supper Draft or Super Draft. And on a more serious note, and I pointed this out on Monday on Twitter, you have four rounds of this draft, and not a single Canadian was selected in these four rounds. That is, you know, at a time here in these most recent months anyways, with everything that happened with Octavio Zambrano and John Hurtman taking over, and a lot of the questions. We thought the Nosa story was interesting. The Zambrano story is super interesting as well. It's an ugly, ugly scenario, if you ask me, the fact that not a single Canadian was taken in the potential of 92 selections from this draft. In fact, of the 92 selections, there was only actually 81 because there was 11 passes.
Well, and that, so, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, for me, it's so unfortunate to see that. I mean, you know, you don't even see an odd Canadian come in at number 87 or whatever. Yeah? It's just it's pretty ugly scene for Canadian soccer that day.
It's, I mean, there is that, and I also can't help but think about the fact that, you know, let's be honest, the Whitecaps didn't draft again. I mean, that was it. They weren't interested. I think perhaps, I mean, like I said, they don't need a USL team to stalk. So that's part of the story there, I think. But I think it's also the bigger picture, which is that, you know, the draft is really, you know, the draft was always an odd thing in a game where players can come from anywhere. But especially now that most clubs take their academies so much more seriously, and there are players that are now being filtered out of the draft system because of that, I find it such a curiosity that it's still even a thing. And I kind of get the principle mm-hmm. that you're trying to say we're not just, you know, letting the best teams take the best players, but you can design a roster system that makes it less likely that the best teams will always end up with the best young kids, and that you're trying to incentivize players playing. And I do wonder, I do wonder if there's, you know, there is a future soon where they sit back and say, yeah, you know, maybe we don't need to do this anymore. I mean, like you said, you have managers literally saying, I'm just not interested. Why am I wasting my time with these players? You know, and I Carl Robinson has talked pretty openly about what he sees from it. And we know that he thinks he can get good defensive players out of it. And they've actually done well enough, you know, I think in the last couple of years anyway, once they've kind of understood what they're really after. But you know, if you're using it as a way to, you know, portion out college defenders, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, in the end, like, they do have to understand whether the kid's actually going to come, you know? You can't just go draft anybody. You know, Tim Parker had never been, if I remember correctly, had never even been to Canada. Or if he had, it had been, you know, Montreal when he was a kid. But he didn't have a problem with coming. Do you know, and you know, the Whitecaps would have known that. Do you have a problem playing in Canada? No. You know, there's not going to be a Steve Francis scenario here. So anyway, I that was my kind of question about it. I saw your observation. I guess it was on Monday about no Canadians, which, you know, there's layers to that story, but the general picture is, yeah, you're right. I mean, Kyle Larin was a star pick. We've seen a few others, but. You know, it shouldn't – you would think that there were enough Canadian kids going south to play collegiate soccer that this would be – you know, there would be a few guys every year. But there's not. And that's a whole other question. And I do recommend people, by the way, J.J. Adams and I are working on a bit of a thing looking at the professionalization of youth sports. Soccer is part of that story. That's coming up, I believe, on the weekend on both theprovince.com and in the newspaper. So,
that's a lovely plug, by the way.
Well, that's what we're here for. Yeah, that's what we're here for. All right, Michael. You know what? We've gone 20 minutes longer than I promised. So people are going to be either pleased or never coming back. Hopefully, it's neither. Hopefully, they just keep downloading and.
Just trick them, PJ. Yeah. Just trick them, and we'll cut the supper draft talk out next time.
Enough,
all right.
Enough of that. All right, Mike. Well, you know what? You have a lovely week, and folks, I will be back next week. I don't know yet who it will be with, but it will be with someone. We'll be talking Whitecaps, and we'll be looking at the Whitecaps heading off to their sunny destinations of course, Las Vegas, Southern California, and Hawaii. Not in that order, but that's what I remembered. And Mike, thanks for being here.
Hey, I enjoyed it. They go to Hawaii first.
Okay, there you go. Anyway, folks, provincesports.com/radio for all our podcasts. And you can find us on Mike on Twitter. He's at Mike Martinego. I'm at Rising Action. We'll see you again soon.